So I just come up, like, there's the darkness with the wings. And as soon as it was this big black thing just standing in the wings. And I go, what's that? I was like, that's strange. And I go, I look like an elephant. And I go, holy. And I'm like, what? And then I was like, I realized, oh, I'm at the circus. But I was like, yeah, they should have told me. I just bumped into the elephant. I was like, what's an elephant doing into the wings? It's like, this is not a cruise ship. This is a circus.
Oh, brilliant. Love it. Boom! And welcome back to season 4 of Meet the Entertainers. I've taken a 2-month break over the Christmas and the carnival period. Obviously, I've forgotten how to speak. It's good to know that I'm still ranked number 9 in the Performing Arts on Podomatic podcast, so thank you for all your support. Brand new features this season, including asking the performer what they have in their bag. Okay, that sounds... Does that sound slightly more professional? A little bit, right? Because, let's be honest, this isn't professional, yeah? This is not. Everybody knows I'm just basically sitting in my room, talking into my phone. Embrace the homemade aspect of the podcast, yeah? The more homemade, the better. Let's drop the phone. There we are. That's me dropping the phone, eh? You can't get more homemade than that. Look, listen, I'm really excited. Season 4 is going to be a great one, and we're starting off with a really, really good interview. It's not often you meet a world record holder, and when I was a kid, juggling was my biggest hobby. And, well, to meet someone who holds world records in juggling is great. And I got to talk to an amazing juggler, great performer, all-round fantastic guy, Niels Dunker. So here it is, my interview with juggling extraordinaire Mr. Niels Dunker. Take it away, Niels. If people want to contact you, what is the best way to reach you?
Okay, so I have my website, comedyjuggler.com.
Yep.
And my information is on the contact page.
Yes.
Of that website.
And how did you get started on this this amazing career? It's something I ask everybody, because it's a very unusual career, the things that we do. How did you get started?
Well when I was as a kid, you had Rotterdam Street Performing Festival.
Yeah.
And my dad always took me there, and I really liked seeing the jugglers.
Mm.
And then there was, for a while, there was some of the shops you could buy juggling balls. It was a bit of a hype in Holland, around 98. And then I got myself a set, and I really got hooked, and I kept going.
Yeah. How did you, had you have any particular ways of practicing juggling?
Well, in the beginning, I really was watching all the videotapes from Anthony Gatto, and he explains how he practices it. So I just kind of followed the same structure.
Yeah.
So he said, like, start with lower numbers first and move up to bigger numbers. And he warmed up always with the balls. And then I think he did the clubs, and then he did the rings. But normally I do the balls first, then I do the rings, and then I finish on the clubs.
Mm.
And he said, like, the clubs just takes more energy. So, yeah, like, save that for the end, so you can, all your leftover energy, you can put in that prop.
You must have spent, like, 3 or 4 years to get some of the 7 ball stuff and the seven objects juggling.
Yeah, I started practicing 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I've done, like, for years and years, like, about 2 hours a day.
Yeah. You were practicing 2 hours a day for... Do you still practice 2 hours a day, or are you at a level where you're just ready to do shows?
Well, it's tough now in the summer at the Comedy Barn Theater in Pigeon Forge in Tennessee.
Yeah.
We do 2 shows a day, so I have to be at the theater around 3:30.
Yeah.
I'm there until 10:30.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty long day. So then if I practice too much in the morning, like, I just start to feel like it's not good for my body. So you have to kind of slow down on the practice on the double show days. If we do that for 3-4 months in a row. But then when we only do 1 show a day, then I can practice like an hour and a half in the morning.
I'd love to get specific stuff. And so let's say if you were showcasing yourself to a client, is there a specific juggling trick that you think would really impress a client? It's not something you're not doing a stage show, but you're trying to impress a new client or something?
Well, I think with a client, like, there's so many different shows and there's so many different clients. So what I always do when it's a new client, I always look what's important to this client. So,
yeah.
For example, if they only need a 7-minute act to the music, which is pretty rare these days, but if they only need that, then, okay, Do they need big tricks? Do they need, like, some, maybe if it's a big venue, maybe if it's a halftime show or something, they need really big stuff. So you go, okay, that's because they need to fill that space, so I need to do the big tricks.
Yeah.
If it's maybe a 20-minute show at a theme park for family audiences, then they maybe want an audience routine with one of the kids from up on stage, and they become the star of the show. So, like, okay, that's very important, that there's a lot of interaction, and then I do a routine like that. So it's, look, what's important to the client, and how can I fit my repertoire of routines? What can I show that will really impress them? So there's just one specific trick.
Right. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
I get a lot of success now with the juggling cups. It's something I really like.
Yeah.
And it's not that many. So now I always look which tricks, because usually if people don't know much about juggling, normally the more props you juggle, they think that you're a better juggler.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty safe bet. And also with magic, there's so many different tricks. So if you do a specific trick that's, like, if the agency has 10 magicians, but you have one special trick or a couple of special ones that clients really like, you're a bit of an advantage, because if there's like tons of guys doing cards and you're the only guy that's not doing cards, if certain venues like a magician every year, but then they're at one point they're done with the card magic, then boom. The same with the juggling. There's so many guys doing balls, cups, balls, rings, and clubs. And then Freddie Canton said, okay, if you start doing the cups, it's still a big trick. It's still stuff flying through the air, so people still think of it as juggling.
Yes.
But it's something that they've not seen so much. Now, and it kind of makes sense. If you want to apply, for example, to a cruise ship agent, they see so many juggling videos of jugglers passing by.
Mm.
But then if you have a couple unique tricks, they go, okay, this adds something to my database, because, this juggler can still pitch to all the clients that like jugglers, but it's a little bit different, so if they already have used the other 10, then we have something that we can still make a sale with.
Mm. Just to jump in here, I want to get the names right. That's Freddie Canton, yes?
Yes.
Okay, I'll put the names in the info to this podcast. And
okay,
yes,
cool.
juggling cups, yeah, that is quite unusual. And I'm wondering, I don't know much about the juggling cups. I've seen it every now and then. In fact, I saw a guy from Holland who makes the Sem Unicycle, Sem Abraham, playing around some juggling cups, I think, once.
Yeah.
Do you know where the juggling cups come from? Is it more popular in Holland, or is it just something unusual all over the world?
It's pretty rare, because I forgot the name. There's one guy that started doing it first, and then Rudy Cardenas, a Mexican circus juggler.
Mm.
He worked with this guy, or saw it, or he stole it. I don't know. Like, he really started working it, and he was working all the big shows in Europe and in the United States.
Yeah.
So he made it more popular. And then Freddie Canton, when Freddie was 16 years old, he saw this guy.
Mm.
And he started doing the cups. But still, it's like most cups are made out of aluminum.
Yeah.
And every time you drop them, they bend. So it's just a big pain in the... Because every time you need to get a new set, and they're very noisy. And so it's pretty inconvenient, and for that reason, not many people do it.
Yeah, and then for people who are maybe a magician, or maybe someone who's listening who's not a juggler, these are, they're sort of cone-shaped cups, and they're very easily stacked one into another. So you can have a stack in your hand, and you can flip some of the cups out of that cup that you're holding in your hand, and hopefully catch them again.
Yeah, because of the cone shape, and they're all stacked, so when you give it a swing, then the entire stack will fly out, they will make one spin in the air, and then they come back in reverse order. So because of the cone shape, they all have a different height, one spin, and they come back.
Yeah. And you hold a world record, didn't you? You broke a world record for the cups, is that right?
Yeah, I did 14.
Wow, I've seen the video.
So that was really cool. Like, that's one of the things that I feel that I can still improve on that one. So as a hobby, it's cool to kind of push yourself and to see how far you can get with that.
Mm.
But then also, professionally, it's still cool if you do a trick in your show and you have the world record with that trick.
Yeah.
Some clients are interested in that, and they...
Exactly.
For marketing purposes.
Exactly. We can talk about the marketing and the use of... The fact that you've got some world records, is it 4 times Guinness World Record holder? Is that right?
I've set 7 now.
Seven now, wow. And you can show, you can, a client, any client who's never heard of you, they'll see that you have set seven yeah. Guinness World Records, and they go, wow, we want this guy.
Yeah, I think it's hard for variety acts. Like, people that don't work so much with variety acts, how can they explain who is better?
Yeah.
And if they want a good performer,
yeah,
then you can give them some tools for them to understand, okay, this guy is good. So, in marketing it plays very well.
Is it true that an agent for an expo in China recommended you get some world records? I read that online somewhere.
Yeah, he said, okay, I really like working in Asia. It's pretty cool. It's a different world, as you know.
Yeah.
Than Europe. I was like, that's kind of cool. I would like to do a couple more gigs here. So I was like, what can I do to help you sell me to your clients? And then he said, in China, they're very competitive as well. And he said, if you get a Guinness World Record, that'll make my job easier.
Ah, and has it worked over the years for you, this being?
Yeah, I think it's good because it's like there's not that many juggling awards that people know, but Guinness World Records is still an organization that everybody knows.
So do you have to? How do you go about that? Do you look in the record book and see if there's a record that you think you could get, and then you just how do you officially get recognized?
Yeah, there are different ways. So one way is to look in the book or go on the website and just look at the records, and then just if you think that's one I can have a go at, just really start practicing until you can break it.
And how do you get it officially recognized? Do you have to send them a video?
This website, GuinnessWorldRecords.com, which is their official website.
Yeah.
And then you can apply for a world record, and they just have all the rules, and they will tell you.
Fascinating. I never knew anything about this. Okay, I might have got a world record. I'm doing shows at the carnival in Hong Kong, and okay. A lot of people say they've done 1 hour of roving, but I don't think they have done 1 hour, because I timed myself with a stopwatch, and I got it down to 1 hour, 0 seconds, and 0 hundredths of a second.
That's the most precise trolling act.
Yeah, so I was down to the actual hundredth of a second, yeah, and I got my boss to verify it with my stopwatch.
that's crazy.
Today I tried to go for the 3 hour mingle, and oh, I was so close. I've got it on my watch right here. I might put a screen capture on the somewhere online. I got it down to two. I was trying to do 3 hours. I got 2 hours, 59 minutes, 59 seconds, 0.99 hundredths. So I was 1 hundredth out from the 3 hour mingle.
and then your agent go, you didn't do 3 hours.
No, I didn't make it. Yeah, I owe them a hundredth of a second. You worked on cruise ships, is that right?
Yeah, I did like about 8 years full time on all the ships.
Wow.
But that was the main gig. I still did other gigs in between, but that was the main one. So in 2009, I finished college. I did finish mechanical engineering.
Mm.
But and then the week thereafter, my agent had set me up with a booking at Royal Caribbean. And that went well, and then I started working for Holland America Line 2, that went well as well, and it just grew from there.
Wow.
But it's a pretty unique lifestyle. It's good. I did one last month. I'm going to do one in 2.5 weeks' time, and then I'm back in the United States, and I'm going to do another 10 months at the show in Tennessee.
Oh,
but it's great. I saw a lot. I even went to Hong Kong one time with a ship.
Hey!
And yeah, so it was cool. It's a good way. It's a good venue to work at,
okay.
But it's a lot of traveling as well. So
yeah, this is one of the few things that I haven't ever really experienced. I've done lots of stuff in my life, performing on different kinds of stages for different functions and theatres, but I've been on small cruise ships for an evening, and they're a nightmare because the ceiling's too low and the boats rock. But I know nothing about working on a big cruise ship. One, I'm probably not good enough. And two, I have a family, so I wouldn't want to be away from them for that long.
Yeah.
But for people like me who don't know, how many shows do you do a day? What's the deal? What kind of work? What's it like working on a cruise ship long term?
Well, it's the performing schedule, it differs per cruise line.
Mm.
And also it differs per cruise. So, for example, I go on a world cruise in 2.5 weeks' time. Those passengers are there for 3 months straight, and they have a lot of sea days. They go all across the world. They visit, like, yeah.
So do you need to change your show throughout the cruise to if it's the same audience?
Well, they prefer, because they fly in so many acts, because they need to entertain those people for 90 days.
Yeah.
So there, if you have more shows, they'll really welcome it. So if you can do 2 45s, that means like the standard duration of a show on board the ship is 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's the evening show. Mm. And usually the acts are repeated for the early seating dinner and the late seating dinner.
Yeah.
And but like on the shorter cruises and the bigger cruise ships, very often they only want you to work one night, so you do 1 45-minute set. You repeat it twice in the evening, but then they want to show variety in the entertainment program. So they have a couple production shows and a couple guest entertainers that do their solo show. Yeah. But then on those long, long cruises, it's great if you can do two evenings. Yeah. But for a juggler to do 90 minutes of different material, it's very difficult.
Yeah, that was my question. I mean, a 45-minute show is already quite a lot for an audience to handle, because unfortunately, juggling, you know, if you've seen it for 5 or 10 minutes, the audience might be thinking it's time for something else. How do you make your show long enough?
Well, there are different ways of juggling. Of course, you have the different props. Like if you do a contact juggling routine, it looks totally different than juggling the clubs.
Mm.
And then the cruise ships have really nice venues as well, so the lighting, the video projector. So there's stuff theoretically that you can put into the show too. For example, like magicians, if they do a card trick, they have the video camera film the card trick, close up on their hands, and they project it on the big video screen.
Yeah.
So with some juggling tricks, that's cool too. So then it looks more like a performing arts centerpiece.
Mm.
If you can, and then they have black lights. So with the LED, you can do LED juggling. It looks totally different again.
Yeah.
And then you have maybe a routine with a volunteer. You have a routine.
That was another question. I was looking at your videos, and I didn't see many volunteers in your shows, but you do have things with volunteers.
Yeah, I do some. Especially in the US, people really like it.
Yeah.
But then also, I think, so some performers, if you have a routine, you need volunteers all the time. It looks like you have no skill yourself.
Hmm.
So I don't want to, don't overkill with the volunteers, but do some, because people like audience interaction. But I think in my cruise ship show, I do one volunteer routine. So about 6 minutes out of those 45 minutes is involving an audience member up on stage. And the other stuff is more, interactive with talking to them, comedy.
Okay. So do your audiences always speak English, or is it ever a problem that you have an audience which doesn't speak much English or any other language that you know?
When I perform in the Netherlands, I have one show on Saturday. Of course, I speak Dutch. They speak Dutch. So they don't speak English, but I can communicate them no problem. In the US, they always speak English.
Mm.
And on the cruise ship, it's a mixed audience.
Yeah.
So I did 2 years ago, I did a 3-week contract on board Star Cruises. And it was between Taiwan and Japan. And there, they didn't speak English. But then, juggling is very visual. And also what I learned when I was working 3 months in Team Brockhaus & Bosch in Japan, you don't need language all the time. You can just, if you just act out stuff clearly, people can understand your intentions without you having to talk English all the time.
Mm.
And then the other stuff on that particular cruise ship, Star Cruises, the cruise director was also the interpreter. So some stuff, if it got more complicated, she would translate it.
What's your favorite kind of microphone? It's always an issue for me. Actually, it's a shame you can't see me. I've got a big bruised lip, though, and I bashed my... I was using a wireless handheld microphone, which I'd attached around my neck. And as I climbed onto my giraffe, I do a fake fall-off where I kind of pretend to fall off. But unfortunately, the microphone bashed me in the face, so I have a big red lip. What kind of microphone do you use?
I have a lapel mic. A really good one. But then for some outside gigs, like with the wind, it's not so good.
Mm.
But then when you work inside in a theater, that's pretty good. It's just that sometimes with the sound tech, it's a little, that one is a little bit more difficult for them to get the settings right.
Yeah.
So sometimes they tell me that the microphone is not good, but is good, but then their expertise is not good enough to level it correctly.
Yeah. So. And on lapel mic is the main one you use.
For most jugglers, I think lapel mic is the best. And your hands are free.
Yeah.
And your head is free. Like when you do the pirouettes or you do physical stuff, sometimes those mics, those headset mics, they're in the way. When you do a head juggling routine.
Yes, hats, of course. Way. It gets in the way of hats all the time.
Look, ideally, for indoor shows, my lapel mic is the best.
Yeah. And let's talk about costumes as well. Looking at you on online, mainly it's a simple black costume, maybe black trousers, black T-shirt, or...
It depends on which venue. Like, it's... On the cruise ships, I like to wear a suit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then at the comedy barn,
You've got like I guess almost like a hillbilly American.
Yeah, overalls. That's their theme. That's their selling point. Yeah. Every performing the show wears overalls, and the theater looks like a big giant barn.
So yes.
That's the costume they prefer. So I think regarding the costumes, you want something that enhances your show. It doesn't, so it's, I have to stand out a little bit, so it's like, okay, this is the performer.
Mm.
And then also, it shouldn't distract from your act, too. It should enhance it.
Yeah.
Like, if you do the juggling, maybe you wear a big, giant clown suit, it's too much and distracts from your juggling.
Yes.
But you go, what's the point? Like, the comedy barn, if that's the theme of the entire show, like a barn-themed show, then overalls makes perfect sense.
That's
and it
right.
enhances the show. On the cruise ship, like, you have formal nights, it's a kind of classy environment.
Mm-hmm.
So a suit does the job really well, at least for my type of act.
Okay.
When you work maybe at a strolling gig at a theme park, you want something colorful.
Mm-hmm.
And something, but it also depends what's your character, what's your persona.
Mm. Do you have any special requirements for your costume? Do the sleeves ever get in the way of juggling?
Well, something with the suit. If I want to do the cuffs, the suit jacket,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't stress enough with the shoulders, so that makes it a little bit more difficult.
Yeah,
so you always
yeah.
want to go for a costume that's physically enables you to do the tricks that you want to do.
What kind of if you're doing juggling in the dark with some sort of a glow ball, so is there a favorite brand or type of glow ball that you like to use?
Different brands for different reasons.
Right.
So when you fly a lot, like to the cruises, you have to fly a lot.
Yeah.
So when you check in your luggage, it can be very cold in that area.
Oh, I love this. Specific tips.
Very nice juggling gloves with the battery inside, but then they just died. Sooner. Because the battery didn't hold the charge anymore because it just got abused in the cold.
Right.
So now I have two different sets. And now the new rules with the airlines, again, which makes it more difficult because you cannot bring a club as hand luggage.
Right.
On the airplane. But now also, at least in the US, you cannot check battery powered devices.
Right.
So if you
my
have
goodness.
A light club, it's both a club and it's battery powered.
Oh no!
So it's kind of difficult. Right now, one time I had to fly with it, and so I brought my nice ones because it was a short flight with the batteries that are inside.
Yeah.
But right now for the cruises, that's what I had before. Just the cheapest light clubs, like the one piece ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can just take the batteries out, pack them in a different compartment of your suitcase. And then those clubs are not battery-powered devices anymore because the battery, you take them out, you store it separately.
Yes.
So then you're complying with the rules and you can still bring them. The only problem is with those juggling clubs, the cheaper one-piece clubs, the handles are so hard. So I was doing triple, like very fast triples.
Yes.
Five clubs with them. And they're pretty heavy.
Yeah.
So then my... I got like a deep internal bruise on my hand just because they're so heavy and they hit my one part of my hand with the bone there all the time. So
I know exactly what you're talking about. I love this. This is what I love. Specific stuff, yeah. I know. If you spin the juggling club too hard, it really hurts the bones in your hands.
So, and then you do five. I did five on the shows that year, so you don't want to be injured.
No.
So then for that show, like the resident show in the U.S., I just bought an extra set of those really expensive, nice LED juggling clubs.
Mm.
They're a little bit lighter, the handles are softer, and the light is brighter as well. So right now I have my set of Dubé one-piece clubs for the cruises.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the resident show in the U.S., I have a set of, I think the brand is Cosmos.
Okay.
Cosmos juggling clubs, and I can just charge them and I leave them at a theater. But like it's now becomes more and more pain flying with all your props. Just like also joining the cruise ships with your juggling knives. They're not dangerously sharp, but they look like a knife. So security always stops you, and you always have to wait to get clearance for the ship. And then so those juggling knives, almost every contract delays me for an hour at security.
Wow, this
just
is
because
fascinating.
They want to know all the ins and outs of that prop.
Yeah. I have a few issues. Like I say, I don't travel much, but if I get a fire show just over the border, say, because Hong Kong borders mainland China, and I have a fire show in mainland China, that's always like, what am I going to do for the fire fuel? I can't really take it through customs on the ferry. Or maybe I can sneak it in and they won't notice. Yeah, it's always tricky.
Yeah, it's tough. And sometimes you can put it in your rider, so the clients have to provide it stuff. But like regarding the fire, I prefer to stay away from it now. It's just
me too.
Not worth the smell and the hassle.
Me too. Were you born in the 80s, mid-80s or something, I'm guessing?
85.
There you are, exactly in the mid-80s. So I was born 1971. So when I started performing professionally in Singapore, in particular, there was no one else who had a unicycle in the whole country.
Yeah.
So they let me do anything I wanted, and I was juggling fire here and fire here, and the smoke alarm fire here. But nowadays there's so many restrictions. Oh, fair enough. And also, I just don't like it. Everything got dirty. Everything was covered
it
in soot.
So, that's good. So the knives, it's still good. You still have an element of danger.
Yes.
But that's something that can stop you too, and it's just annoying.
Yeah.
So now I had something else that I was experimenting with for those gigs, those garden weasels.
Okay, let's just jump in here a second. Garden weasels, you might want to Google that, because honestly, I pretended I knew what Niels was referring to, but actually I haven't got a clue. So I Googled it, and garden weasel, it's a gardening tool. If you just Google it, garden, and then weasel, W-E-A-S-E-L, you'll see these sticks for gardening with these weird spiky bits on the end. So they'd be great for juggling with. All right, so Google that, have a look. If you go on my website and watch the video for this podcast, www.thebigbenshow.com, I'll put some images up of the garden weasel. all right, let's go back to me, pretending I know what Niels is referring to.
Something else that I was experimenting with for those gigs, those garden weasels.
Oh, yeah?
So if you put garden weasels on a stick, they don't... This is something I'm going to experiment with.
Yeah.
So, because I only need it for one trick, so it will do the job for that one trick, but they don't show up on security as standard knives, so they don't look like weapons. They would look kind of exotic.
Yeah.
So it's more, you can, if you tell them, look, it's a stage prop, and they just look, the points, they're not super sharp, they go, okay, whatever. So that's my next thing. If I need to fly with it again a lot, and just for that one trick, I'd rather have a couple garden weasels.
Yeah, that's a great idea. How about music? Again, this is something that's affected my career. When I started, there was no YouTube. No one worried about the copyright of music. You grabbed any music you liked. You had it on what they called an audio cassette, and you gave it to the MC, and they put it in their stereo cassette player. and you could play whatever you want. You could play a theme tune, you could play Mission Impossible, you could play whatever you wanted. But nowadays, I find it particularly all my YouTube videos slowly get taken down for copyright reasons, because most of my music is from 20 years ago, and it's all copyrighted. So, do you have any copyright issues, or do you get music written especially for yourself?
I had done, especially written, like, maybe on two occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And then further, if you can, start with royalty-free music.
Mm, yes.
And add in the accents, then that solves the problem, too.
Mm.
And then, if you can, yeah, like some databases, if you can look for, like, a certain mood, you can put in the duration, the mood, and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And then you hit search, and then you get a selection of music. And then if you can, yeah, just pick the music that fits your act.
You, again, are in a better position than me. I do one-man shows, traveling around, do birthday parties, turn up at shopping centres. So I have to, I don't have time to talk to the sound crew. I just say, here's my music, press play.
Yeah.
Do you have, because you're working on cruises and in theatres, and you're working for the Comedy Barn Theatre, I'm guessing you have someone who knows all your music cues and can stop and start when you need it. Is that right? Or not?
Sometimes not. Like now so before they had this MP3 tech, and now you also have the Audio Ape. So I bought an Audio Ape system, which allows me to run my own sounds through my iPhone on the sound system from the venue.
Wow.
So then I can do that myself. So then there's always somebody that knows my cues, because that's half the time that's me on corporate gigs and stuff.
Mm.
But then in the theater, the sound technician has seen the show so many times, so he knows.
Yeah.
So that's easy. And then on the cruise ships, you usually give them a cue sheet off the show, and then you do a rehearsal.
Yes, of course.
But then that's the first time they see the show. So sometimes they make a mistake, but they're good. So they've seen many shows. They get a feel for the shows. Usually that's good. On the Comedy Barn, it's great because they see the show every night. And then on one-offs, I use that system that I can do it on my own wireless remote.
How about your persona on stage? You do sort of you do a bit of talking, stand-up comedy style talking between the juggling tricks. Has that been something you've done from early on in your career?
When I was in the first time I saw jugglers at the Rotterdam Street Performing Festival, it was already that they were talking in between the routines or during the routines. So for me, that was the first impression of a juggler, that style of performing. But it took a long time to actually develop it, because in the beginning, you know, if you dropped your tricks all the time, it's very difficult to display your persona, because the audience is so distracted by your lack of technique. So first you need to own that. Yeah. Only if the technique is so solid, then you have this extra energy you can give to portraying your persona on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, like, for me, it works well if you're just, like, energetic, friendly. And then, like, on the cruises, and also in Tennessee, with my accent, it's kind of cool that you're from Holland. Like, that's something special.
Yes.
For international audiences. So I play that up a little bit. And, yeah, just look what's unique to you. And then some stuff that people already remark on. And then just you kind of address it already yourself. And then make some jokes about it. And that's out of the way. And then you can entertain them.
Yes. Your persona seems to be an extension of yourself. From what I see online, you seem very sociable and very friendly. And is that your persona on stage?
Yeah, I think if we're an entertainer, we're there to make our day a little bit better.
Yeah.
So we want to be friendly. Everybody likes friendly people. If you're personable, people really enjoy that too. So, I just want to be a friendly, energetic, open person on stage. And the same in the marketing. Like how I see it, when you promote your show, like your website has to kind of show the same character that you do on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And they get through your promotion material, they get a feel for what they will get when they book your show.
Yes.
So that you can, if you're super grumpy as a business person, but then you want to be super friendly during the show, maybe you can do that if you work for an agent. But if you, yeah, just for, if you talk to producers and stuff yourself, it's much better if you're just like friendly all the way through.
Amazing. That was my next question. Yeah, does it help your business being nice to people?
I think it's also just for congruency.
Yes, congruency.
Like,
yes.
That they, through your promotional materials, they want to get a feel for your show.
That's
and
very interesting.
So you want to have the promo text and your video kind of edited, your photos in the same style as how you're going to be performing.
Yes. Yes, because people often say that. They say, oh, you've got to show that, like, when you market yourself, it's got to be one thing. Don't try to be everything. So in a sense, there's a common thread running through everything for you. Your friendly, sociable personality is what they see on stage. It's what they see on your website. It's what they see if they meet you in person and you're trying to market your show.
Yeah, and I think when your character's not as much in line, if it's kind of like eccentric or whatever, still be friendly and professional in the business side.
Mm.
But then there's no way, like in the colors you pick for your website, your logo, all that kind of stuff, it can be kind of like your stage character too. It should be. But then, of course, you want to be friendly and professional, that they can book you and be a professional business owner, but further display your product in your marketing.
You have a great logo, sort of an animated video logo. I love it. It's that letters N and D for your name, with juggling balls flying around it. Did you design did you invent that one yourself? How did you get that made?
It's funny. When I was 14, I was playing around in Microsoft Word, and I came up with the same idea. And for years, I never used it. And then my friend John Taylor, he's an illusionist. He had a really good logo, and he said, "Oh, we'll queue up with my graphic designer." That he found. He found him in the Yellow Pages. So he went through the Yellow Pages, and he went to the graphic designer's department, and then he just booked the graphic designer that has the best app, the best designed app. He's like, okay. If they're probably gonna design their own app, so I want the guy that has done the best job on that. So he hired a guy, he had a really good logo, and then he connected me with him, and then he came up with this logo. And I go, oh, that's great. And it also,
it's a lovely logo. It's really
my
good.
Show, and now it's now it's my logo animation. It's the opening effect of my show.
Yes.
I got that big logo. I got it built as a prop. It's my prop stand on stage.
Oh, fantastic!
It's because now, like everywhere in my business, you see my logo.
So again, you have the congruity. It's something that's there on your website. It's in your show. Yeah, it's a brand. It's branding, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good. And then I read in one business book, it said too, like, if you get tired of your logo, don't change it out. Because that's, if you get tired of it, that's just the moment that everybody kind of starts to recognize it.
Ah, there you are. That's a good point. I like that. Yeah, just because you're tired of it doesn't mean that anybody else is. People are starting to recognize it.
All the people that don't care as much about your business as you do, they finally start to pick up on it. So just keep it because, you have invested so much in it. Now you finally start getting the rewards from it.
Talking about more, marketing and social media, you have you're like me, you're a bit of a YouTube addict. You have lots of videos on YouTube, really good ones. You've got YouTube juggling tutorials.
Yeah, those do very well for me.
Yeah, some of them have got like 40,000 plus, more than that, views. It's amazing.
Yeah, one has like 850,000 now.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's good. Like, I was thinking, for the juggling tutorials, I'm going to make the best videos that I can. So basically, if I would be selling it, what, like 100% the best quality, what do people expect? I'm just not holding back, and then I'm going to give it away for free.
Yeah.
And so people are really happy now with it. Like, it's my 5 ball juggling tutorial has over 500,000 views. And so basically, it's a very specific video, 5 ball tutorial. So people are only going to watch it if they are interested in learning 5 balls.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the difference between a beginner juggler and becoming a really good juggler.
Man, maybe I should have watched that 25 years ago when I spent a year in my office trying to juggle 5 balls. If only YouTube videos had been around. Oh, dear.
Yeah, if YouTube was then. But it's good. Like, so many people, colleagues, and Now when you go to juggling clubs, like every juggling club, a couple of people have watched those videos. So it's really cool when you travel and you go to a local juggling club and the people already know you.
You're that guy. You're that guy. You made a YouTube video. Yeah.
They're friendly to you because of that reason. It's kind of cool.
So, yeah, that's great. So, I mean, I was thinking that it's good publicity and maybe it's your passion, but it's also just you go to a juggling club and it's just lovely that people will have seen your videos and know you in a way already.
Yeah, and then also, like, promotion-wise, like, if you never know. Like, some people, like colleagues, if they learn a trick from you from those videos, that means it's a positive anchor in their mind towards me.
Yes.
So maybe later, too, if they need a gig and they need to book somebody, go, oh, we know that name, we like that name. So, and that could lead to gigs as well.
So you're saying some potential client might see your video and be impressed by the juggling tutorial, and that might lead to a contract and paid work.
Yeah, it could be. And also just exposure on the internet.
Well, yeah, I mean, and exposure's great.
You do juggling workshops as well. Like if you can tell a client, look, these are my instructional videos, this is the style that I'm teaching in, it shows indirectly, it's almost like a promo video, that they can see that you know what you're talking about.
Are you a professional? Do you run professional juggling workshops as well as being a performer?
So I have my shows and I do my workshops.
Oh.
So I have jugglingworkshop.com, and that's the website for my workshops.
I'm just going to repeat that, jugglingworkshop.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. So what are your sources of income? I thought it was just performing, but you have also from workshops. Do you have any other sources of income?
I have the shows according to different venues, cruise ships, the theater in the U.S., some corporate events, then the workshops. And then I try to, Dick Franco, when I start performing, he 10 years ago professionally, he said, like, okay, now you finally have a longer-term professional gig. So, it's trying to save your money because it's pretty tough. Late someday you want to retire if you start saving now and start investing it wisely.
Yeah.
And then the chance that with the juggling, one day you can retire of it.
Yeah, we're going to go back to social media and marketing in a minute. Normally I end with the future, but let's go into the future. Yeah, there is the thing, if you're a performer and you're a physical performer such as a juggler, you do have to think about your future. I don't think many entertainers think about it straight away when they're in their teens and their 20s. But as you get older and closer to 50, 60, you realise there will be a physical limit to certain tricks. They'll become harder to do and you won't want to do those things. Do you have any thoughts about the future, or are you still way too young to think about that?
Well, I think also instead of just like your physical limitations, just now with the way the world is moving, everybody's used to looking at apps all the time.
Yes.
YouTube, all that stuff. If you see those YouTube channels with all this amazing stuff, then for us, if you juggle 5 balls, 4 balls, 3 torches, it's not as amazing anymore.
That's true.
In
because
the audience's mind, as it used to be.
I remember Anthony Gatto talking about that. He found it quite frustrating that people will put up a video of them juggling some 9 object or something, and he'd point out that it's the video isn't the same as seeing someone do it live.
Yeah, so like people like amazing stuff, they don't see it as 100% amazing anymore very quickly.
Yeah, they don't realize in order to get that video, someone's probably taken about 500 takes to get it finally right. Once.
So, and then if you look at it, like, yeah, some of the festivals and events, like when I was a kid, there were more street performing festivals.
Mm.
There are not so many street performing festivals. Like variety theaters, there are not that many variety theaters.
Sure, there's changes. I mean, when I started, I started by chance because I happened to be in Singapore in 1994 with a unicycle, and someone saw me riding my unicycle along the street and said, "Can you do a show?" And I went, "Yeah." And for about 10 years, there were masses of shows in the shopping centers in Singapore, but not anymore. Things, trends come and go.
Yeah, so. With I think for me, like, I expect to have another 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
real stuff. But then also after, you know, I think in about 10 years, the venue is that you can just work steadily on a respectable level. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tough. So it's like after about 10 years to really enjoy it. And then maybe when I'm around 40, maybe you don't want to be juggling all the time anymore. Mm. Just to keep it as a hobby, but not having to go to some kids' birthday party, street performing, all those kind of venues, or even flying to roll the cruise ships. Then you go, okay, cool. I can still, you know, do it when there's good opportunity arises.
Yeah.
And then further just practice for fun.
Yeah.
And then run another business on the side.
Yeah, yeah, run another business. Do you have any idea what you'd do? What your other business
right now,
would be?
I think the marketing stuff is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I really enjoy that.
Yeah.
Prop building is pretty cool. I really like that. I was working on a couple book projects. That's pretty cool, too. So I'm learning a lot of stuff about that as well. But I think probably the marketing and the PR and stuff.
Mm.
I think just the way it goes, like more like with the YouTube, Instagram, blogs, all that stuff, people just need... It becomes so difficult to get attention for any project.
Mm.
So if you're good at drumming up attention for a product, then there should be some market in that.
Yeah.
And to be money to be made in that, in advertising or something.
Mm.
So I think between, as a performer, we're performing, we're showing our skill, we're selling something to the audience, so we know how to grab their attention, to keep their attention.
Yeah.
And we, with the joke writing, we have a better feel. People think it's funny and interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah. Maybe with that, like with the creative thinking, and just showing something unusual to the audience, if you can, instead of doing it on a stage, maybe do it on the internet somewhere.
Yeah.
And do that for another client, and then just be an ad guy, and just when a good opportunity for a show comes, take it, and further just enjoy the juggling.
Mm.
Just have fun with it.
Talking about enjoying stuff and having fun on social media, when I was just randomly flipping through YouTube about you, I saw a funny video about a social experiment, juggling versus magic, which makes more money.
Yeah, it was my friend Rockus. I'm doing a show with him in the United States in April.
Oh, brilliant.
And he said, like, oh, we should do that. That's fun. And we knew we were not going to make much money with it. It was not the point. It was just, yeah, to do something weird and see how many views we can get on YouTube.
It's a funny video.
So while we were performing for those people on the street, it was more that we were performing for potential future viewers on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah. Ventriloquism is a hobby for you, ? Is that right?
Well, I was playing with it for a little bit.
That one you could do for a long time, I think, a ventriloquist.
Yeah, but it freaked me out. Because at one point, I became better and better at it. So at one point, like with the juggling, when you get better and better, at one point you don't have to think about all the trolls and the moves.
Yeah.
They go automatically.
Yeah.
Same with ventriloquism. Like, the dummy started moving almost automatically by itself. And that freaked me out because it was still some kind of part of me that was controlling it, but it was kind of moving on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it felt very schizophrenic. So I was like, okay, I need to stop. This is weird.
I do a bit of ventriloquism as well as a hobby, but I always found it's much easier to do it. Much easier to practice, but getting on stage is way harder to be a ventriloquist.
Okay.
Because the heart beats faster and the lips start moving and you can't, I find it very tricky on stage. So I take my head off to people who can do it professionally. Very hard.
Yeah, it's cool. It's freaked me out. It's like, I need to stop.
Okay.
And I was practicing a little bit on the cruise ship. It was funny. The cruise director was like, okay. Are you getting so lonely now that you're taking a dummy with you so you can get somebody to talk to? I was like, okay, time to move on.
Talking about books, you've got a few books, right? Catch My Greatness, is that one?
Catching Greatness.
Catching Greatness. Catch Can't Be Wrong.
A couple years ago.
Yeah.
Like so, Barry Friedman from Showbiz Blueprint, he was coaching me for quite a while, and he's like, okay, your life is pretty amazing, especially for like teenagers that don't travel that much and just need to find a path in life.
Mm.
So it's like, if you write a book, you can show them that if you really like something and just go for it with hard work and discipline, you can just achieve it. So just, instead of like playing all your energy, putting in video games, just, there's, the world is bigger than that.
So I'm just going to put a name down here. Barry Friedman, I put him in the notes. That's his website, www.getmorecorporategigs.com is a good one, right?
Yeah, that's his older website, and then he has a newer one, showbizblueprint.com.
Right.
And then, so that was one book, and then another book I just wanted to write, and that's now we're selling it at the Comedy Barn. It's just a Learn How to Juggle book, and I packed it with a little comedy routine. So I gave the kids the tools how to learn how to juggle, and then a little routine that they can perform as well.
Mm.
And I threw in a little bit of the history of juggling, a couple juggling cartoons about me. So basically it's a little fun book as merchandise after the shows.
I think it's wonderful. And I think just making a book in itself is worthwhile. Does it also financially make sense?
Yeah, it's good. Like, you need to have a venue where you can sell it.
Mm.
Like, if you just only have it on Amazon, not many people will buy it.
That's right, they won't
but
find
if
it.
But if you build a relationship with the audience on stage, and then they want to take something home as a souvenir
that's
from the show.
That's right, that's how to sell a book. Of course it is, yes. They see your show,
yeah,
and then your book's available in the foyer.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
And then the other book that I'm very proud of is Help My Friend Carl-Heinz Seaton published his latest book. It's 600 pages. It's about the history of juggling.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most comprehensive book about the history of juggling ever written. And
wow.
It was a big project, but that's available from jugglinghistory.com.
Okay, just repeat the name again, jugglinghistory.com, and the name of the book?
It's Juggling, the Past and the Future.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Unscrupulous agents, how do you make sure you get paid? !
Well, for me, the agents that I'm working with, they're really good agents.
Right.
So I made sure that I just, like, the guys that can represent me, I want them to be the top players in their field.
Mm-hmm.
So since they're the top players, they're honest guys, and they have good clients.
Yeah. Influences, choreographer and magician Joni, Spira?
Yeah, so like when I, in the beginning, it's so difficult to make a living with the shows, and there's so much stuff you don't know. So, when I started working on the ships, it was a new beast for me. So it's like, okay, how can I make my show the best it can be? So I was lucky that I was on board with illusionist John Taylor. He helped me a lot getting onto the ships.
Right.
But at the same time, Magic Magazine was still around.
Right.
And Joni Spina was she worked for David Copperfield for many, many years.
Yes, I read her obituary and she seems extraordinary.
So, it was really great. And then she had this awesome product she was offering. So for $500, I could send a video of my show and she would critique it and send me back all kinds of show notes. So just that one session kept me busy for 2.5 years just
Brilliant.
To implement all those changes.
Yeah. Wow.
And then Dan Holtzman helped me too. Like, he has a service for that too. It's called braingrizzles.com.
Yep.
And he helps you with comedy writing and he teaches you how to write more comedy.
Yes, I googled Daniel Holtzman and I instantly recognized his face. I can't remember where I saw him though, but yeah, I recognized the guy.
Yeah, he is very memorable with his voice, and he's very smart with that, too. So he helped me for a couple of years. We did, like, a call every month or a couple times a month, and he just explained me how I was thinking, and we went for my show, and we just worked on it.
How important is originality? I've read that you have had experience of another performer stealing an act of yours.
That's annoying. It's a bit of a compliment as well that they like the idea so much that they think it's worthy in their show.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I think just professionally, like, look, if you have a show, but it looks the same like all the other shows, what's the reason why one client would book you over the other guys?
Yeah, yeah.
So if your show is more unique or better, both, then you just stand a bigger chance of getting the bookings.
All right.
So I think for selfish, it's just as a selfish reason, it's good to be original.
How do you start on stage? Do you start with lots of music?
For example, with the ships, first I was just doing my show, starting it the normal way, like you come on stage, you start with your first routine. But then on the ships, they like they're looking at a star, they like the show more.
Ah.
So instead of a younger, or they look, oh, this is this guy. Then they enjoy the show more. So I have in the Netherlands tons of TV appearances.
Right.
So then we added the video, like a minute of showing just highlights of those TV clips.
Oh, great.
Playing that before the show builds, sets a better first impression.
Then
when you start the show, they like it more because they think, oh, this guy is famous. So they're going to enjoy it more.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of this is just a jogger.
Well, I could do that somehow. I haven't got many TV clips, but I've got radio clips and things. So I could play an audio for his radio clips.
And even if you just start with, like, okay, a bit about your background, voiceover, mentioning some of your credits and all the stuff. So just build, like, celebrity status in the audience's mind. And people think it's a great show because you're famous. Right?
Yeah, because it is all about making them see you as a dazzling, amazing performer. And anything that helps set the scene for that is great.
Any venue is different, so you always look what does it need for this venue. But for the cruise ships, that was a very good change to the beginning of my show.
Yeah.
And then thereafter, a lot of people, because they don't buy tickets to that show, they come late to the show sometime.
Yes, yes.
So I hate when I'm juggling and have all these people moving in the audience.
Right.
It just distracts me because peripheral vision, it just distracts me.
Mm.
So, but also people really like the LED juggling.
Mm.
So I started then with a short 2 to 3 minute LED juggling routine,
mm-hmm.
which is a little bit more unique. People don't see that often.
Yeah.
And it's still dark in the theater, so those people who come late, they have another 2-3 minutes to find a seat without distracting me.
Oh, that is fantastic. I love it. This is why I love doing these podcasts. Yes, of course. If you don't want to see the audience coming in, do a routine that's in the dark with LED. Brilliant. Love it.
So I do the video. And then, but then also it was important another 15 seconds between the video and going into the blackout.
Then
I come on stage, I can say, hello, welcome to the show, hope you're going to have a great time.
Yeah.
And then, because then at least they see that it's me, otherwise it's too much. Then it's about 4 minutes off the show. This is my show that they have not seen me.
Right.
Which is, so it's good to connect real brief with them and then just go into the
Yes, I understand. Because if you have the video and then straight into darkness, they still wouldn't even actually seen you in person.
And then my opening bit, like the logo, my ND logo,
yeah.
There are juggling balls in my logo. So I have my my logo is in my prop case, and then I take the juggling balls, which are glow balls, out of my logo.
Oh, lovely.
And then so it just ties together the same, the pre-show look of my show.
Yeah.
It's that animation of my logo, that the balls shoot out of the logo. And then I do the TV clips, and then my opening effect is that I take the balls out of my logo and I start juggling those balls.
Ah,
so it kind of comes full circle.
Great. So you've got the LED. What happens after that?
Well, then thereafter, I just want to build a relationship with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a couple jokes about being from Holland and all that stuff, so they get a feel for the person, the performer they're going to watch,
mm-hmm.
that show.
Yeah.
And then I go to a smaller bit, then I go to the contact juggling for a short minute,
mm-hmm.
which is cute. It also tells them that this is not like any other juggling show.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit more artistic. And then I do the head juggling.
Mm-hmm.
So then I go from one to three objects. But then it's quite flashy, so they know, okay, this guy, he's good, and
yeah.
it's different than all the other jugglers. And then I go to five ball juggling, so I have a couple more jokes to show my character, and then I go to five, so that's more proof of skill, so they know, okay, this guy has his stuff down. And then I do a video thing with the cigar boxes, so I tell them a little bit about the history of juggling, and so there's more. They go, okay, it's just not about just it's only juggling. There's more to it. It's more like they learn something. It's about some celebrities. And so they learn
Yes.
Some stuff
you do need to change the pace sometimes. You can't just have juggling, 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 juggling. You've got to... So if you have a little bit of a bit about the history of juggling with the cigar boxes, I understand that would be a great change of pace for the audience.
And then I do something with the Diablo,
mm-hmm.
the Chinese yo-yo,
yep.
And then I have LED lights inside of the Diablo. So also then if we make it a little bit darker, but not like a full blackout.
Right.
It's more like a pouring piece. It makes it look more unique and bigger as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go to my audience member routine. So it makes it more personal again.
What do you do with the audience member? What do you do with the audience member?
I have a routine. Like, I have a couple. I have a routine that I call an apple eating contest. And I have a routine with, get knives, and you put a guy on the floor, and you do a bunch of business with him. And then I have another one that I juggle the balls. And that's more better for a kid or an old lady, and they
right.
have to catch the balls in a bag.
Yeah.
And then I had a thing with a hula hoop as well. So I have four different audience member routines that I can pick from.
How do you pick your volunteer? Sometimes it's crucial to get the right person.
How do I pick them? I always look for a person that doesn't look that grumpy and looks like he will be good sport.
Yeah.
But then also it depends. Like for when I put the guy on the floor, usually I like somebody around their 40s
mm-hmm.
that are still young enough and healthy enough and to lay down and stand up again.
Yeah.
Then for the kid routine, you want to have a kid that's not too old, not too young,
yeah.
kind of cute. So, when I can, I just pre-select them. I just look into the audience before the show.
Yeah.
And then I just go for a couple. Like, okay, this is my first choice, this is my second choice, this is my third choice.
So you'll
because
do this...
leave the show.
Yeah, I've done that as well.
Plan B.
Yeah, before... Sorry to keep jumping in. So, yeah, I do that as well sometimes. Actually, before the show, not during the show, but before the show, I'll be peeking out and seeing which table's laughing the most, which person might be the best volunteer. Because if you leave it to the last minute, sometimes I make a mistake and I pick someone and they don't want to come up. If they don't want to come up, then the next person doesn't want to come up, and then nobody wants to come up, and it's like, okay.
Yeah, then it just kills the show a little bit.
Exactly. So you've done the volunteer part. How long are you into the show now? Has it been 20 minutes, 30 minutes?
That's about 30 minutes.
Yeah, I'd imagine so, yeah.
And then I want to finish on something. And then I do the ring juggling with UV light.
Mm-hmm.
Changes the scene of the stage again. And then I close on the light club routine.
Wow.
And people really like that. And then again, it becomes kind of full circle. Then you started with something... with the lights, and then you end with something with the lights, it's kind of
fantastic. You can't see, I'm bowing down and clapping. Maybe you can hear the clapping. Yeah. I love it. Wow. What's in your bag? Not the bag that you take on stage, but the bag that you carry with you when you're going to shows. So my bag, I'm opening up here. I've got all kinds of weird things. I have an envelope, with plastic card inside, exactly the same size as a check. So if someone pays me their check, the check doesn't get creased. I've got lip balm, because if I'm working outside and it's cold, my lips will crack and my hands will crack. I've got a box of name cards, of course. I've got nail clippers, because I hate it when my nails start breaking during fast juggling. Are there any specific things that you carry with you that aren't used on stage but are always in your bag?
One thing, maybe for what I did for the juggling hats.
Oh, yeah?
When you fly with them,
mm-hmm.
like the rest of the weight of your luggage kind of crumbles up your hats.
Yes.
Make them not as stiff anymore, so
yes.
they ruin them more quickly.
Yes.
So what I did, I took plastic... trash containers, small ones.
Oh.
And I cut like a brim, so they can go in between the felt juggling hats, so they'll keep their stiffness.
Oh, that's brilliant! I love it.
So that's one that I came up with. Also, when you have like a small plastic container where you put in maybe your batteries or
mm-hmm.
Your ping pong balls to juggle, with a, I poked a little hole in the lid of those containers because of the air difference in the airplane.
Ah, yes.
Then otherwise it sucks its vacuum and it's very difficult to open the lid again. But if you have a little hole in it, you can open the container very easily.
Amazing.
And another good tip, like my friend Dan Holtzman from the who helped me,
yeah.
He just finished his book and I wrote the foreword for it. It's 1001 Tips for Professional Variety Entertainers.
Ah, great.
So that book will be released very, very soon and it will have 1001 tips just like this.
These little things.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Oh, that's great.
Another tip, always wear the same color underwear as your show pants.
Oh, yeah.
So that's another thing. Like one time I lost a bit of weight and it was funny because they, people say, oh, you probably ripped your pants on stage because you were too fat. So it's like, no, actually I was working out and I lost some weight, but then the pants from my suit went a little lower. So the crotch area goes a little lower too. But then if you make a big bow, like a big pose, then yeah, it's just more apart. So then because of that, because the crotch was lower, it ripped the seam there. But it wasn't right at the end of my show. But, like, I was wearing black underwear and had black pants. So it's okay. But then I realized, always wear the same. Same if your zipper goes down. You don't wear it. If it's the same color, it's like a magic trick. People don't really see it.
You know what? That is so bizarre. I have exactly the same issue in my mind right now. That is so weird. That is bizarre. Because a lot of my act is built around my trousers falling off. Because I do as I'm not so as I decided that five ball juggling wasn't really for me, I thought I'll emphasise more on the silly elements of my show. So for 25 years now, my trousers always fall off, and I have special zips to make my trousers fall off whenever I want to. But the problem is the elastic in the trousers starts to weaken after a while. And so when I pull the trousers up, unless I keep on replacing them like every 2 months, and I'm not going to do that, that would be a waste of money, the trousers slowly start to sag down slightly during my show. So my silly underwear starts to show again, and it just annoys me. And the only thing I can think of at the moment is, apart from getting new elastic for my trousers, is yeah, making sure that maybe my silly underwear sort of maybe it matches my t-shirt or my jacket, so that as the trousers fall down, if my t-shirt's black and my underwear's black, it will match and they won't be so obvious that there's a great band of pink or green or whatever the underwear is.
Yeah.
So amazing. I had the same issue. That's fantastic.
There you go.
Let's end it there. That's brilliant. So that is Niels Dunker. Super juggler, super performer, super businessman, an all round fantastic nice guy. What a great start to season 4. Alright, I'll talk to you in a week or so. Take care. No, hold on. What's that, Ben? A new feature for season 4? Yes, welcome, folks, to the after show. This is a new season, and this is a new... Oh, come on. Let's try and get my tongue around these words. Let's try that again. This is a new season, huh? And this is a new feature on season 4 of Meet the Entertainers. This is just for the entertainers and, well, let's be honest... It's basically for me, so I don't forget what I've learnt. In this season 4, there is an after show, and you're listening to it right now. And in the after show, I will list all the various important things that I think I've learnt. So, dear listener, if you're listening to this in the future, and you want to get all the tips from a podcast, you can just skip to the end of the podcast, to the after show, and there'll be a nice long list of all these amazing tips from these amazing performers, such as Niels Dunker. Okay, what did Niels talk about? Well, as the garden weasel, it looks great for juggling, it looks dangerous, but it's safe enough to be allowed to be carried on a plane as transport. Oh, sorry, not as transport. You can't fly on a garden weasel, that's not transport. Now, the garden weasel can be carried on a plane as baggage. Great tip number 2, His marketing. Niels has congruity in his branding. He has the same persona for marketing as he does when he's performing. It's all the same person. What about this for a tip for performers on cruise ships? Lights out at the start of your show so you don't get distracted by final members of the audience making their way into their seats. What a great tip. Another great tip. What a fantastic way to protect your hats when travelling, by taking plastic waste paper bins and cutting strips around to protect your hats. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go onto my website, www.thebigbenshow.com. Go onto my website, where there'll be a YouTube video of this podcast. The YouTube video has photos, so you can see what we're talking about. Photos of Neil's hats. Oh, flipping back to marketing again. Obviously, I didn't really plan this list properly. Well, going back to marketing. If you can get a world record, that really helps sell your show. And sometimes some of these records are pretty obscure. So even if you're like me and you haven't got a huge talent, you might just be able to set a world record. So I'm going to write to Guinness right now and tell them I've done the 1 hour mingle. Of course, there are also some great tips for your trousers. You might want to coordinate your underwear under your trousers with either your t-shirt or your trousers, depending on your style of show. That's in case your trousers slip off. That's what I'm talking about, okay? Well, I could go on talking for ages and ages about Neil's amazing tips, but I'm going to end right there. If you want to learn even more, just go to my website,
www.thebigbenshow.com.
Look at the podcasts, and you'll see there's a video, or there will be pretty soon, a video of this podcast, which will include some photos to help explain some of the stuff. And also, on that video, if I have time, there will be an after show with even more stuff. Eh? Yeah? Alright, talk to you again soon, guys. Bye-bye.